addressed something also really interesting here about scale as you were talking. Now, a lot of organizations are experimenting or talking about it, but when they do experiment, they have a trouble shifting from the experimentation stage then to growing and scaling. Can you talk about why that happens? What are the most common reasons for that challenge between moving from an experiment, finding some validation, wanting to scale, but then not really being able to do that?
Well, if you think how it's usually done, right, it starts as a, what I would call a bottom-up effort in parts of the organization where you have some enthusiasts who have been to a conference, read a book, believe in, you know, customer-centric approach, and they start to do that. And, you know, often they get funding and they get some consultants to come in and do training, then choose their teams. And that's great as an initial, you know, seeding the new culture and ways of working. But sooner rather than later, they start running into what I call, you know, the walls of the enterprise.
Yeah.
Right? They need to get funding, but funding cannot be done for experiments because everyone is requiring you to, you know, put a fake business case together. They run into strategic planning process, which is also completely outdated. They run into decision making. If you need to jump hoops through, you know, 10, 15 committees until you get a decision, there is nothing agile or lean about that, you know. If the culture doesn't support the principles of experimentation, which includes failing fast, and there is, you know, even in some organization, we have all seen it, a possibility of, you know, losing your job because you have, you know, talked them out of doing this project or investing in this product, then how do you really experiment? How do you really scale that? You know, we have seen organizations where it's almost impossible to talk to customers because sales organization is so protective of them. Mm-hmm. So if you can't hire talent quickly enough and you need to scale, you know, from initial pilot to a bigger team, if you can't reassign talent when you fail, so, you know, failing fast means you're saving a lot of money to the organization, right? And the team that has all these learnings that that they can share with a new initiative, we should be able to reassign them to something else quickly. But we often see HR processes and contracts and the way we incentivize and reward people so rigid that that's impossible. If you have the leadership that doesn't get this at all, right, and that's still expecting, as I said, you know, 3 to 5 year projections where you have the centralized decision making where people are not really empowered to do any of this, then it's very hard to go far in the organization, right? I think these initial efforts are very, very important in terms of seeding the enthusiasm and showing how things can be done differently. But they also need that ecosystem that we've discussed. And there needs to be awareness in the organization that, again, we are experimenting, we are innovating for a reason and connecting, you know, this whole transformation to the business reasons, to the business strategy, having a clear set of KPIs as to how we're going to measure success of all this investment, how we're going to measure transformation in a more holistic way, and then coming up with a, you know, very holistic roadmap as to how we're going to change as an organization to enable this beyond just the initial efforts. And that has to include HR and finance and leadership and decision making and that portfolio approach I mentioned before. But most importantly, it needs to include the culture and the mindset change, which is, as we know, hardest to change in a large organization that's been around for hundreds of years.
That's an excellent overview, Sonia. And let's just dive into just one of those. So if you can think of a scenario you went through with a client where there were challenges in terms from moving to from experimentation to scale, so whether it was hiring people or the right people, perhaps from outside of the organization or something else, what was a big issue that you saw? And then can you share, as a part of this ability to scale or interest in scaling, what was the solution for the organization as they actually did effectively move to scale?
Yeah, I'll give you one example, which I think will resonate with everyone who listens to this, and that's finance, right? So when we started this program at Pearson, getting product teams to innovate and experiment was easy enough, right? To teach them how to come up with hypotheses, how to go and talk to customers, allow that to happen, give them coaching, training, brilliant. And we had this great project, it was happening in, you know, outside of US, and team basically invalidated all the hypotheses, which was great, and did very quickly and cheaply. And then the management came in and said, that's all great, but, you know, we have a budget and we have a deadline and we need to carry on. So, you know, great job. We are very happy you have tested this new approach, but we don't really have time for this. And that's the moment I realized that finance and governance are key in enabling this to scale across the organization. So we've spent probably next 2 years developing what we call the Lean Product Lifecycle, which is a systematic framework for how we build and bring products to market from idea all the way to retirement, that define the stages, that define the criteria and data points for how you move from one stage to another, define what's expected of decision makers, but also what's expected from product teams, develop the training program to support the rollout of that across the business, run that program through, you know, some pilots first with product teams, but then with the whole business unit to prove how it would work end to end. And what most importantly, work with finance to enable data-driven and incremental funding, right? So that same as with startups, you will get some seed funding to go and validate your initial hypothesis, to work with customers, to build an MVP if you ever get to that stage. And only when you have all the data points and your, you know, product market fit, you go and request a large amount. So once we achieve that, that process basically replaced the business case altogether in the business. And most importantly, allowed us to decentralize decision-making. So instead of everyone going to the top and asking for funding, decision-making was pushed down in the organization to people who are very close to product or idea and who had the knowledge and who are also trained on how to make decisions differently, what questions to ask. So we had this, you know, common framework that was used both from the perspective of the team working on idea, but also from the decision makers making decisions, so they would never ask a team again for, you know, a business case or 3 to 5 year projections if they're in early stages, but would also never give them money again, kind of, you know, it's a license to spend. It's not a license to spend. Even if you have money somewhere in the budget sitting, potentially marked for this initiative, until there is actual evidence of customer needs, of solution, you know, validation, of a product market fit. If you think about what MVP really means, a minimum viable product that needs to prove feasibility and desirability, and most importantly, viability, which, you know, mostly organizations kind of step as a, you know, as a process in the process. That's the whole game, right? How do we fund incrementally to support you, not to kill your idea too quickly because by asking wrong questions, but also not giving you a blank check to go and spend years or millions building something that no one wants, because that also often happens in large organizations. This whole notion of, we are only going to work on big initiatives, you know, give me a $100 million idea and we are going to work on that and it's going to take us 5 years and we are not going to bother with customers because we know exactly what we are doing. And then by the time we launch, you know, there are 3 competitive products in the market who are probably better, and they bother talking to customers with it. And we wasted a lot of money and time.
Absolutely. And I found the same thing just in my ongoing research as I was talking to some entrepreneurs recently who were saying, you know, when we're trying to do these experiments, we can't find $10,000 or $50,000. This is a very large organization. They can find maybe 100, even that's difficult, or 500 to a million is much a much easier pocket of money to find, which is to your point. I mean, if you don't have all of these players engaged, if the entire system and ecosystem isn't supporting experimentation, it's not going to work. It's not just about having a hackathon or about having a methodology in place.
No, where people it's a know really how to go. Systematic approach, because if you think about it, 90% of startups fail. 90% of projects in a corporate world fail. So if you want to find the 10%, you're not going to stumble upon one idea that's going to miraculously work. You need to go and test a lot of ideas. You know, you really need to open that funnel. And to do that, you need to have a framework. You need to have a systematic approach as to how you do that, how you evaluate ideas, how you fund them. You need to set that funding aside. You need to have some thought behind what type of ideas are we looking for. It's not enough just to say we want ideas that are aligned to strategy, but what is the strategy, right? Is that strategy measurable in any way? Has it been articulated as a set of hypotheses we can go and test and validate? Are we interested in even investing in Horizon 3? How much do we want to invest in Horizon 3? I mean, there are some big questions these organizations need to answer in order to build this ecosystem. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen by, you know, forming a small innovation team on the side and then giving them problems that the rest of the organization should be solving. I've seen that a lot. A lot of my clients have innovation departments, and what they're doing is so horizon one, so core problems that anyone in the business can solve. And I always say to executives of those companies, if you have an innovation department that's not looking at Horizon 3 at all, then why do you have them? What's the purpose of innovation if it's not transformative innovation?
Right, right. And, you know, I'm just going to, Sonia, add on just one question. We can choose to keep it here or not, but I think this is such an interesting conversation. When we think about the horizons, for example, when you get to Horizon 3, when you're thinking about the moonshot, can experimentation support Horizon 3? And my other question is, does that kind of experimentation have to be separated from the core organization?
I think the whole organization needs to start to act as a lean enterprise. I think those principles that we talked about, experimentation, adaptability, continuous learning, data-driven approach, needs to be in every part of the organization, every cross-functional team, but truly cross-functional, right? It has to have all the skills that they need to develop something or bring it to market, needs to act like that. I think you should probably have separate teams looking at Horizon 3, but it has to be thought through. You need to say, this is our appetite for risk. We know that in order to grow, we need to start investing in Horizon 2 and 3. We cannot just continue to maintain and, you know, hope for the best. You know, a lot of these companies in a very protective game, you know, when you look at their portfolios, everything is in Horizon 1, and everything is in what I would call, when you look at from the life cycle lens, in kind of sustained to be retired soon. So, you know, few cash cows that are still making money, but will not in a couple of years. So if you don't have anything that's going to offset that, then you're not self-disrupting. Someone else will come in and take your lunch. I mean, that's for sure, right? And we have seen that. There are too many examples, right? So the question here is, are you going to wait for that to happen and then to think about innovation and transformation? Or are you going to start preparing for that, which means admitting that, you know, to this reality of digital has happened, you know, let's accept that as reality. Disruption is happening. Let's accept that as reality. Globalization, how we engage with the workforce, has happened. Let's accept that. And what do we do with that? How do we then use all of that as a force to change for a better? Instead of, you know, often you hear, if only we can go back to, you know, what we had 3 to 5 years ago because it was so good. Yeah. So unless someone invents a time machine, I think we have to embrace this and, you know, move forward and really, yeah. You know, I think it's a very exciting times. I'm hoping more and more companies are going to realize that this is a better way of working that results in a, you know, happier workforce, definitely happier customers. We've implemented a lot of co-design and co-development on projects at Pearson. And, you know, the reactions you would get from teachers or students was amazing. You know, the first time someone actually entered a classroom and asked them how they feel and, you know, actually, you know, sat there and developed a product with them and took their feedback on board. It's an amazing what you get as an outcome, of course.
Yeah, and tracking that back to the intrapreneur or the person from the company who's working on this, that makes them feel engaged, right? Which is an equally difficult problem, right? Retention, engagement.
HR, again, apart from finance, probably the most important partner if you're thinking about innovation and transformation, because how we retain talent, how we hire talent, how we incentivize, how we assess throughout the year, how we, you know, reward. You know, people are not rewarded in the right way, from leadership all the way to the sales. So they're not rewarded based on, you know, satisfying customers or longer term growth of the company. They're very much incentivized on short term results. Yeah. And I think that's also leading to a problem of people are not really incentivized to think about the longer term change and that ecosystem that's needed in order for this to flourish in the organization. So that's why they call it innovation theater, because we are making these little small steps and making, you know, in some cases, a substantial investment if you're bringing consultants and training parts of the organization, that's ultimately not leading anywhere.
Yeah, agreed.